Over the past few weeks, we've been taking a look back at 2015 and the events leading to the U.S. and other world powers striking a nuclear deal with Iran. And we're doing it with help from Lacey Healy, host of the PRX podcast, Things That Go Boom.
Hi, Carol. So, yeah, as you recall, the Iran deal was really contentious. There were a lot of folks on both sides for and against the deal, and there were a lot of organizations working behind the scenes. So this week on Things That Go Boom, we're looking into one of those organizations, and we're following the money to figure out who's behind it and the role that money had to play.
So what's the organization?
So it's called United Against a Nuclear Iran. It goes by the acronym UANI.
UANI.
I don't think they really thought about the acronym before they made the name. So UANI was founded before there was even a deal on the table back in 2008. Their stated objective was, and is because they're still around, it's, quote, to prevent Iran from fulfilling its ambition to become a regional superpower possessing nuclear weapons. And during the negotiations, they were out there. They were working to sway public opinion along those lines. And they even helped write legislation. So to help us in our research, we reached out to Catherine Sullivan from the podcast Trump Inc.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Lacey.
Catherine noticed that UANI has some big names on the roster, folks like Jeb Bush and Joe Lieberman, along with a whole slew of folks from the intelligence community. But there's another reason that UANI sparked her interest.
It was also unclear where their money came from, and they had a reputation of being quite secretive.
There's this clip of UANI's co-founder Mark Wallace in 2012, where he's asked twice, who funds UANI?
Now, this is a lobbying group. Who is funding this?
Well, first of all, lobbying group, I think, is misplaced. It's really an activist group. We have over 27...
And twice, he dodges the question.
A government funded?
It's not. We're privately funded. It's a 501c3 not-for-profit. Our contributions are confidential because a lot of people who support this, we don't want to be...
I don't think many respectable organizations that don't have anything to hide would not disclose their funders.
Catherine learns that there's this one reporter who's been bird-dogging the story of UANI's funding for years.
My name is Eli Clifton. I'm an investigative reporter who focuses on the role of money in influencing U.S. foreign policy.
And UANI is on his radar.
It's really a fantastic case study and maybe a microcosm of the ways in which American foreign policy is actually influenced and implemented.
You might remember, the Obama administration had been using tough sanctions to bring Iran to the negotiating table. But UANI is going the extra mile, attacking even the folks that are doing legal business with Iran, like companies selling medicine and vaccines.
This was no longer a coercive strategy to bring Iran to the negotiating table. Instead, it was clear that they wanted something else.
Eli wants to know what. So he starts digging around, and at first, he doesn't turn up much. But he keeps looking at UANI's roster of big names, all these former diplomats and politicians.
There was little to no explanation for why this startup organization with a rather narrow focus would have that draw to it. It didn't make sense.
And he notices something kind of odd. Remember Mark Wallace, UANI's co-founder? When Eli looks into it, he realizes that some years, he's not even getting paid by UANI. His actual salary traces back to this guy named Thomas Kaplan.
Well, Mark Wallace is leading one of the country's loudest pressure groups on Iran. He's also working as a top executive for Thomas Kaplan at his company called the Electrum Group.
So that's interesting. So who is Kaplan then?
So Thomas Kaplan is a gold and silver investor. He's a billionaire. He speaks with a very particular type of affect, with a kind of indistinguishable accent.
Gold is not a commodity. It is a currency with the longest known provenance that we have. Actually, gold and...
Thomas Kaplan clearly puts a lot of effort into cultivating a certain image around himself as a Renaissance man.
He has a PhD from Oxford in British colonial history, and he also has some pretty major hobbies.
He started a big cat conservation organization called Panthera. Oh, and he's one of, if not the world's largest collector of Rembrandts.
Eli's pretty confused by the whole Kaplan connection at first, but then something happens that helps him connect the dots.
Well, I won't say how I found it, but what I did find, or what I did get, is something called United Against Nuclear Iran's Schedule B form.
And it's the part of a nonprofit's tax form that tells you where their money comes from.
Eli had a snapshot of Ioanni's funding from 2013. The first name is Sheldon Adelson. He was one of Trump's top campaign donors, not so big on Iran. In 2013, Adelson gave Ioanni $500,000.
I mean, Sheldon Adelson's pretty extreme. He has, like, publicly said that we should bomb Iran.
So check mark in that box. That was no surprise.
There were two trusts listed on the form. One is called Butterfield Trust. The other one is called New Generations Trust. Mm-hmm. But when you look in the address section of what these trusts are, it says care of the Tigris Group.
What is that?
The Tigris Group is a financial firm that's controlled by Thomas Kaplan.
So together, Eli's Schedule B says that these two trusts controlled by Kaplan gave a total of $843,000 to Ioanni, which might not seem like much, but it's about half of Ioanni's total budget for the year. And that's not counting Wallace's salary.
So what you're saying is that in 2013, basically two people funded this organization.
Right. Most of their budget came from the Adelson Foundation and from Thomas Kaplan's trusts.
And significantly more from Kaplan.
Yeah, over $300,000 more.
You could buy part of a Rembrandt for that.
Yeah, just a small fraction.
About 3%. So after he finds the Schedule B, Eli has more questions than answers. Why is a gold and silver investor interested in naming and shaming groups doing business with Iran anyway? The simple answer could be that he's just ideologically committed to Ioanni's mission. But there's also this other thing, which is that the Iranians have, on occasion, used gold to get around sanctions because they've been shut out of international banks. There are even some reports of Iran stockpiling gold to shore up its currency, which could drive up the price of gold, meaning sanctions could be good for Kaplan's bottom line. To add fuel to the fire, an official filing for one of Kaplan's companies, a silver mine, acknowledges that political unrest in the Middle East is a factor in the mine's success.
Wow, that's quite the contention. Lacey Healy, what does Kaplan have to say about that?
He actually has declined to comment. We reached out through multiple avenues, called, emailed. We finally did get a hold of him, and he had no comment. Ioanni was the same. But we did talk to Ioanni co-founder, former ambassador Dennis Ross, and he told us that he thinks the claim that Ioanni might have something to gain or Kaplan might have something to gain from continued unrest in the Middle East is bunk.
I mean, that strikes me as being a leap. This is not an organization that is trying to promote unrest in the Middle East by countering the Iranians from having a nuclear weapon. They're actually trying to make things more stable. But they're not creating unrest in the Middle East. The unrest in the Middle East is endemic to the region.
Dennis Ross there. And Lacey, you said that Ioanni is still around.
Yeah, they are. So they're still naming and shaming companies. They're still advocating for greater pressure on Iran. But they're no longer being sued by a Greek shipping magnate.
A Greek shipping magnate. That sounds cool. But for that story, you and I will have to check out the Things That Go Boom podcast hosted by Lacey Healy. There's a link at theworld.org. Thanks, Lacey.
Thanks so much, Carol. Always a pleasure.